Chris Snow, Flames Assistant General Manager, and Wednesday was 1 year since he was diagnosed with ALS, and since then, raising more than $150,000 for ALS research. His hashtag trickshot for Snowy, huge in raising awareness. Some of the biggest celebrities in the world have partaken in the trickshot for Snowy. And to donate, you can, and for more information, you can go to calgaryflames.com/snowystrong. Chris Snow on the line right now. Chris, thanks so much for doing this. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
So it's insane. The celebrities that have joined into and participated in Trickshot for Snowy, Pat McAfee threw a football over a building and hit a target. That was nuts. Theo Epstein yesterday kicking a football 50 yards. Like, what is the thing that's blown you away the most?
Well, I think it's how the sports community really rallies. The really neat thing is that we're all rather connected. I'm pretty fortunate that as a former baseball writer, I developed some relationships with people like Theo, other general managers who were younger guys at that time who were beginning to start that analytical wave, and met people in the NBA. And so I'm able to now reach back into those fields. And when they say yes, and I think it's fun too. I think that, you know, I was joking with Theo last night, an hour in, that he had 102,000 views of that video. And he said, yeah, but 98,000 of them are me. And I think it's just a campaign that is, it's fun. You get to show off a little bit and do something to really help what is a cause that needs the help.
How many takes for Theo, though, Chris?
You know what? I didn't ask him that question. The only question I asked him, because I had done a kick the day before from 43 yards, and my drop, three-step drop, and kind of the allowable distance to approach a field goal, you could see. In Theo's case, I couldn't see it. I said, hey, did you run for like 20 feet to this thing? And he said, nope, three steps, just listen, and you can hear all three of them. So I would say it probably didn't take him very many based on the angle of that kick. That was pretty good.
Or maybe you could hear the last three of the run-up.
yeah, he was far too far away.
So I've heard over my years in this business a lot of people take shots at sports writers saying, you know, they're failed athletes, or they, you know, really want to be part of the business. And they're only writing because they can't. As someone who successfully transitioned from sports writing to being, an executive in a major professional sport, I mean, Ned Colletti did that too. But I can't think of too many others. How do you make that switch? And how difficult is it?
Well, I was very fortunate to do so at a time when there were very few people in front offices who were not former players. And I was fortunate that at that point in time, the salary cap was brand new. The idea of using data to assess players was brand new. And I just happened to know Doug Risebrough, who found me to be curious and asked really annoying questions that were very specific and database in nature when he was running the Wild and I was a journalist back in 2003 and 2004. So I think it was a moment in time. I think today that would be a very difficult move because there are so many people who work for people like myself, and it's become such a specialized and really the bar is just higher. I think the bar was lower and I knew somebody and I was really fortunate to do that.
So what would your advice be then? Would it be to go like to some Ivy League school, become a big brain, work on your spreadsheets, be one of those analytic darlings?
Well, I do think that the size of analytical departments are growing a great deal. I surveyed some teams this past February when I was doing my annual budget, and I was shocked to see how the spending on staffing in that area has grown. And so the advice I tend to give is develop a specialty that, A, you're going to want to use for your career, because if you become someone with a degree in economics, you better want to use it to do that, not just to work for a team, because the odds are still long. Or become a computer programmer, but do it because you want to program computers, and then find a way to catch the eye of the team. So I would say it tends to be, you know, challenging and difficult, and probably for a lot of people a part-time or passion project that maybe becomes a job, but there's no doubt the number of those roles that are available, that number is growing every single year.
Yeah, it is, and we see it too at the ballpark every day with the growth of the analytics department. You're doing all this, of course, with like the specter of ALS hanging over your head because it's in the family. And I remember a couple of years ago here, Chris, when Joe Smith was with the Blue Jays as a reliever, he's doing all the things he's doing with Huntington's disease in the family. Obviously, very different, but both very, big deals. And I remember talking to him about it, and he was like, I can't think about it. At least there's a test for Huntington's to see if you're going to pass it on to your kids. And he said, if we're going to have kids, then maybe I'll get tested. But right now, I can't think about it. I have to live. What was it like for you before last year to just have that in the background, I'm assuming the whole time?
Yeah, it was a bit of a challenge. I think it became a real challenge when, see, I've lost, if people aren't familiar with my story, I've lost my dad and two uncles and a 28-year-old cousin to the disease, three of them in the last 7 years and the other 7 years before that, so 14 years ago. It was a thought, but it became a bigger thought when my cousin got sick because he was so young. Everyone before that was my uncle's late 40s, early 50s. My dad wound up being 67, 68, I suppose, at diagnosis and when he passed away. So when my cousin got sick, it became, a concern. But there, to your point, there is no definitive test. This is really a process of elimination diagnosis. And that's the way it was for me. I went through an ultrasound of my elbow thinking it was a nerve. I went through an MRI of my neck thinking it was a nerve, really hoping it was one of these things that was pinched off somewhere. And finally, at I think my sixth appointment, a doctor looked at me and said, this is pointing toward motor neuron disease. And hearing those words is, as I've said many times, it's really a death sentence. And to be here a year later with, as I know it, the most aggressive form of this, which carries a life expectancy of 6 to 18 months, is a credit to science and research and the kind of fundraising we're trying to do. Because these trials, mine is probably the best, most advanced trial going, but they're starting to come, and I think they're going to come fast and furious.
And again, if people want to donate, they can go to calgaryflames.com/snowystrong. You can also participate in the hashtag #TrickShotForSnowy. Yeah, you're doing incredibly well, Chris. Like anybody that's seen the video of you kicking the football, considering your diagnosis from a year ago, like how do you feel today?
I feel really good. I have to remind myself sometimes if I get a little bit hung up on, what I don't have, which is really just a couple of things. I'd remind myself of last year, of last June. And my story, for that matter, when I go back to last June, is very much connected to your city because I was instantly connected to the doctor, Lauren Zinman at Sunnybrook, who was one of the leaders in this area, not just in Canada, but in North America. And on June 24th of last year, a week after being diagnosed, he had facilitated me coming in to be screened for this trial and gave me all of the optimism and belief in the world. When I walked out of his office, the last thing he said to me was, "We are here to make history." And to go from what you perceive to be, someone telling you your life will be over in a year at age 38, 39, to someone saying you're going to be one of the first to potentially beat this was, I had chills walking down that hallway.
I mean, I can't imagine what that's like. And Ben gave the Flames website, but that's what this thing is all about. All these trick shots, the ice bucket challenge was a lot of fun on social media, but the goal was to raise money and raise awareness. And this goal is to raise money and raise awareness so that we can further this research and make legitimate history. And a lot of people have a lot of there've been a push lately to donate to a lot of different things lately as we go through this pandemic and as we go through the what what's another civil rights revolution south of the border. If you have a little bit of room left, this is a wonderful cause. to do it. You know, ALS is it's a brutal thing, and it's something that is obviously forever connected to baseball, which is my sport. But this is, I mean, this is more than just people throwing footballs out of windows into trucks passing by.
That's right. That's right. And I think that the benefit to social media, the real good that it can do, is the reach it can have. You know, Pat McAfee, or backing it up, my college friend Jeff Passan, who writes for ESPN about baseball, he has 500,000 followers, and he throws a football through hoop from 33 yards, and then he challenges Pat McAfee, and Pat McAfee, with his 1.8 million followers, challenges Aaron Rodgers. And that's reach. And with reach, we don't need as many big donations. Much like I said when I kicked that field goal the other day, if every person who watched that had given $1, we would have raised $330,000. So I always say it takes just a little bit from a lot of people, and I think that's much more attainable than asking a lot from a limited number.
Yeah, and it's going to continue to grow, especially when Eddie Vedder and David Ortiz do their videos after they were called on by Theo Epstein.
Theo and Eddie are really close. They had vacationed together. They met back in 03 when Theo was hired as GM of the Red Sox, and he happened to mention somewhere that Pearl Jam was his favorite band. And Eddie Vedder reached out, invited him to a concert, and he said to Theo last night, he said, "I'm in, and I have something wild planned."
I can't wait to see it.
I can't wait. And David Ortiz, I was around him for 2 years as a baseball writer, and he is as good and as funny a guy as I've met, and my understanding is that he will begin as well.
Yeah, understandably. It's such a great cause, and it's getting so much traction. Before we let you go, I want to ask a hockey question, Chris, naturally.
Okay.
I mean, you guys have this play-in series against the Jets coming up. You also have the draft. Like, where is your focus more right now? It's just, I mean, that series is so far down the line, it feels like, and it's such an unknown. I mean, the draft is too, but, like, where are you finding the most of your focus right now?
Well, the good thing is we thought the draft for a while was going to be as soon as the first week of June. So we prepared like that was going to happen in April and the first half of May. So our draft preparation has been done for a while, and now we can revisit it because we'll have the benefit of time. But our focus right now is on the players who are in town, the players who will get back here, you know, working with individuals one-on-one, even with video, and just building, you know, a plan for getting their minds focused on, you know, what they're going to need to do to be ready once we can step on the ice together. So I think the focus is turning more and more toward the team and toward play as we approach July.
Chris, again, it was my pleasure, my honor to talk to you today. Incredible work you've done. Again, the website is calgaryflames.com/snowystrong to donate. Hashtag trickshot for Snowy. They're going to keep coming fast and furious, and this is going to continue to grow. Great job. Thanks so much for this, Chris.
Thank you both for the time. I really appreciate it.